Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Hey, Scott Spears along with you here on a Tuesday morning, Tuesday, March the 29th, 2022, 14 minutes past the hour, and we have got a great show ahead of us this morning. We're going to kick it off this morning by talking about current events, everything going on in the world, with a very popular host on Blog Talk Radio, Mike Essen. Mike, how you doing?
Great, Scott. It's an honor to be in your program. Thank you so much.
Good to talk with you again. It's been a while. Let's start off this morning talking about Ukraine. This story has dominated the news for more than a month now. Give us your thoughts on what's going on over near Russia.
First of all, it's genocide and tragedy. I just hope and pray that we come up with a more ready solution than we have and a much better president than we have, because the energy dependence issue was a major part of this. He is not giving them the internet sources of the food or that they need. Sanctions are like slap on the wrist. And I wish we'd have somebody out there who would say to Putin, like Donald Trump or Ron DeSantis would, you're not going to do this anymore. I don't have all the answers strategically. They would know better than me.
What needs to be done?
We need to have peace, some kind of peace talks, not in the Belarus. That's like Putin talking to his cousin. But I wouldn't put troops in there. That would be a quagmire that would put us and the people there in danger, like Iraq and many other countries, Libya and so forth. But we need to have do business with anything that's Russia-oriented. We need to cut it off the market. We need to pressure them economically so they get out of there. And then we need to have peace talks so they leave Zelensky and the Ukraine alone.
Why do you feel Biden is not going far enough?
I think it's his stubbornness. And I think he has ties with Russia. Biden is the kind of person who is not capable of saying, I'm sorry or I made a mistake. He made a mistake with the Keystone Pipeline. He's in cahoots with Russia and China. And he's very callous, frankly. He doesn't care about people dying at the border or people being human trafficked. Why should we be surprised?
Now, when you say he's in cahoots with Russia, how do you mean?
Well, Russia and China are allies, and he does business with them and does what they tell him to do. And they kind of own him a little more than he owns them. That's why the world seems as weak.
Now, haven't the same claims been made against President Trump?
Yes, but the actions say different. He strangleholded China for a while. He worked with them in the art of the deal fashion, and the left perceived that as being loose with Putin. In fact, right, he did not interfere with Putin in the election of 2016. Biden didn't either in 2020, but the drilling part and him not taking any action, I think, speaks for itself. Second one in particular.
Was it good for former President Trump to give praise to President Putin as this all started?
No. Not necessarily, no, because, well, the kind of praise he gave, he just said he was smart. He made it clear he was evil. But people are going to misinterpret that, and the media is going to jump all over that. That's why I say it wasn't a good idea. Never underestimate your adversary, so it's true. He's kind of on walking on ice. So, I mean, he didn't do anything bad. It just wasn't a good move politically.
A few years ago, when Trump met with Putin, and that was heavily criticized, what did you make of that?
I think it was over. The criticism was unjust. He didn't meet with him to be partners or have a one world order, which I'll get to in a second. He met with him to try to make Russia and the world a better place. So I think that was a mistake. Unlike Joe Biden, who the only time he ever told the truth was he said he wants a new world order. Well, sometime to tell the truth, I'll tell you.
Now, tell me about the one world order.
It's a globalist phenomenon, and where everybody pretty much has the same government. It's sort of like a unisex thing in the gender role. This would be a unit government. The United Nations has been on this in the world circle, and that would be very dangerous, terrible for the world, because I don't even think we should be in the UN, but to have them determine policy, dangerous.
Now, where does the idea from the one world order come from? A lot of people have said this is a conspiracy theory.
It is, but let me quote Alan Arkin, or Alan Alda, whoever it was, Catch-22. Just because you're paranoid doesn't mean someone's not coming after you. Conspiracy theories aren't always wrong. Like, someone that you and I had the pleasure of interviewing before her passing was Phyllis Schlafly. She talked about this all the time in Eagle Forum, and she was, by the way, a member of a group which I speak for in Miami, the John Birch Society, for a little while, and who I think gets those critics, excuse me, didn't run tactics. But just because there's people do conspire to do things sometimes. I mean, some conspiracy theories are bizarre. You know, I don't believe that. I mean, the 9/11 truthers and the even the birther movement I don't support. But this one I do. I support it. I agree it's happened.
Well, much like the One World Order conspiracy theory, the fact that Joe Biden has ties to Russia or Donald Trump has ties to Russia, do we really know any of this concrete?
Concrete, yes, with Biden. Trump, there's speculation. I think with Biden, you got to put two and two together with Hunter's laptop, and he's always doing whatever China wants. He didn't call him out with the China virus, what it was, the coronavirus. I think, you know, when vultures of a feather flock together, you know?
Well, what about ties to Russia?
He does everything Putin wants, too. He's almost like a slave to him. It's embarrassing to the world. It's very scary.
Now, how much do you think people's political ideology makes up their opinion on this subject?
Totally. We're in an ideological war, Scott. We have, if they arm the people, I'm not saying anything that's dangerous, but if they arm the people in Congress, watch out. There could be a civil war based on ideology. I don't know. But remember the day, Scott, when Ted Kennedy and Orrin Hatch were best friends? And Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill were best friends. I'd actually let you go back to those dates. But gone are the dates.
Why did we lose those?
It all started when Bush was charged stealing the election. Slowly and slowly, the left hated him so much that they now like because he doesn't like Trump. And he calls him a Nazi, a murderer, who went AWOL. But then Obama, who reignited the race wars, caused division, started Antifa and BLM, who I debated on my program, if I want BLM. And from there, it just went worse and worse and worse. Those two presidents have something to do with it.
Now, you clearly have a political ideology. Where was your political ideology formed?
Well, there, you know, I came from a liberal family, and there was no road to Damascus experience, but two issues did it for me, Scott, in the 80s. I was alive then, guys. Abortion, I always favored the right to life of the innocent unborn child. And then there was the full war, and I was a staunch anti-communist. It was a direct threat to what, internally and externally, just like it is today. And the left didn't even care back then. And Reagan ended the full war, and he was right.
Now, who has been the greatest president in your lifetime?
I would say Ronald Reagan. I'll tell you why. Although Trump has a lot of accomplishments, do you remember the day, Scott, when we used to worry about nuclear war? Now there's no Soviet Union to worry about it with. And also, his economic achievements were stellar. He didn't get us out of the recession. He got us out of a double dip recession. And he also introduced these two strains in SDI. And also, the aircraft controller strike was just amazing how he did that. And everything, his speaking ability, I think, is better than Trump's. Why would he put second? Because Nixon was the first president when I was born, by the way. Because he made the people believe in themselves, and it got results. I'm going to say Ronald Reagan.
Do you think people are fearful of nuclear war now?
No. A little bit, but not like they were back then.
Do you think there's the possibility of it with Russia? Putin says people close to Putin says it's not off the table.
It's not off the table, but we could do so much more before then. I don't think it's a realistic chance at this point. I mean, 3 years I could do something different, but no, I don't. But remember, Reagan did it for the time, and it lasted for 30 years. So someone could undo everybody's good deeds. Like Biden is going to reinstate the Iranian nuclear deal and the individual mandate, two great accomplishments of Trump's to get him off the table.
Do you feel that strategically we have always handled the world the best way we could as Americans?
Always no. Because I have to say every war was just and every war wasn't. I want to confess something. I was wrong on the Iraq war because there were no weapons of mass destruction. I do think Vietnam was justified because we had that war won on the ropes until the Church Case Amendment said Kennedy would troops from there, and Gerald Ford withdrew. When we withdrew, the North Vietnamese slaughtered thousands of South Vietnamese. Everything the domino, the right said about the domino theory happens. But no, not always. The Libya war under Obama was a disgrace.
Are you surprised with how many people want to go to war with Russia right now?
No, because I don't think they're informed enough.
What are they misinformed about?
It's not. Well, let me say this. They're so emotional. Like, I heard a woman from the Ukraine say that was cried for help. That I think they really want to help these people, but I don't think they're as informed as you and I about the consequences of it.
If you had to explain somebody what the consequences of boots on the ground for America would be in Ukraine, what would you say?
I would remind them we've lost small countries like that. It would create a possible World War III. That's the only way that maybe a nuclear war could happen. We would not win. We would be in a country up against the size of Ohio, Scott, against the Soviet Russia, and it would be an absolute faster, and we don't want to get in a quagmire like that. And our economy would go way, 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 way down, maybe into a depression.
As you said in the beginning, it's hard to have an answer to this. So what is the answer?
I have theories, but I don't. It's hard for me because I have very strong opinions, as you notice, but it's hard to have a strong opinion on a complex issue. The first thing we do, give the people internet access, house the refugees, give them some weapons, and also get help Putin if you want to negotiate with him, which I don't think Biden's going to do, though people have surprised me more than that. And try, don't mean it to Belarus, and the sanctions, well, they never work, but try to talk him into, side with him and try to talk him into not massacring his own people and make him convince himself that he gain out of it. It's a big thing.
What would the negotiations look like? Don't you think we're past that point?
Oh, no. Because they've negotiated basically with Putin's cousins, moderating him. Not literally, but that's. I think we have to be on the table. It depends who's negotiating in the first place. Like if my governor, Ron DeSantis, I'm not a big fan of Mike DeWine, sorry, with basketball, but if Donald Trump, Ron DeSantis, and Ted Cruz were there, I think that they would get tough, but not crazy tough, and they would find a way to convince them. Also, this is a big thing. it's not in your interest. Remember, the love of money is the root of at least most evils, if not all.
What do you think caused this to happen now?
The start of it, the very start of it, was energy independence. And Russia got more money hungry. When Russia allied with China, and China could invade Taiwan, they have the same mindset now. And also, Putin was always this KGB guy. When Marco Rubio said, once a KGB, always a KGB person. And he wanted to slaughter the people there, and he's doing what he wanted to do, and it's evil.
What is the threat of a World War III right now?
That would be if we got involved. That would be if China invaded Taiwan. That would be if we reinstated the dangerous Iranian nuclear deal. That would be World War III.
How long can Ukraine hold out?
They're doing better than we thought, but not long. I just don't see it. I mean, they're such a small country. It's a David Goliath scenario. And I just don't see them holding up too much longer. But Russia's not doing as well as we thought. But that's like saying if I fight a 10-year-old, I'm not doing as well as I fought. You know what I mean?
If Ukraine gives in, what are the chances that Putin will not go somewhere else?
Not high. See, the Soviet Union, which I was talking about Ronald Reagan demolishing, he has that mentality, and he wants to bring it back. I'm not saying he'll be successful. There's a lot of variables to that. But he will try to get Kazakhstan or another country after that. And I think that one thing that Donald Trump did was he actually did the Abraham Accords. And he's running for office. He can do the Abraham Accords. He can talk to Putin.
Why do you think Putin did not try this during the Trump administration?
He and Trump wouldn't put up with it. See, Trump is a very good... One thing I give the President Trump credit for, I think he did an excellent job, though he didn't have a second term, is he was the man of the art of the deal. He knew how to deal with other people and get what they and we wanted out of it. Like in the Abraham Accords, like with Yemen, like with Israel, and the Golan Heights, and many other areas. And I think he can't be the only one who could do this. I mean, I believe our governor, DeSantis, would make a great president. I think Ted Cruz would make a great president. Josh Hawley even would do better than Biden's doing.
At what point during Trump's presidency did he ever level any sanctions toward Putin?
Can't remember.
I don't think there were, and we had proven cyber attacks, things of that nature, and clearly Putin's threatening those now. Why were there never any open-door talks, which I believe there were closed-door talks between the two? Why were there never any sanctions then? Clearly President Trump had to know he was not a sane man.
I agree with you on that, Scott. The thing is, sanctions are a slap on the wrist. It's like a little girl punching a wrestler. I mean, that's the best way I can put it. It doesn't really do much. But close talks, I think, with someone with a maniac like Putin, are better than exposing him to the world and pressing that button and doing an EMP-style attack on the world. Just like China did with the China virus.
But isn't it bad that our own government doesn't even have a record of those talks? I'm not saying anything bad went on, but nobody knows what went on.
That's the thing. What we know is the tip of the iceberg. And sometimes we choose to tell people. Because remember, people also are very panicky and confidence has a lot to do with the economic system. And sometimes it's best just to make people a little more ignorant and a little more productive. And when the time comes, sometimes you need to let people know anyway. Like father, like when my parents, when I was under the Jimmy Carter administration, I was 9. My parents wouldn't tell me, and they were right, about the economy because I would have freaked out. But I could not know what the hostage situation was. I knew he was a scumbag.
Now, people who have spoken out against Putin in the past, certainly include former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. Putin hated her. Madeleine Albright, they were not friends. People of that nature. Now, these would not be people who you see eye to eye with, but if we go back and play clips from the 2016 presidential campaign, Putin was the talk of a lot of that. And it was Hillary Clinton who was saying how dangerous he was, that Trump was a gift to Putin. I believe she said that in one of the debates, that Trump was a puppet. And Trump never said anything negative about Putin at all. So do you line up more with Hillary Clinton now? Be hard on Russia? Be as tough as you can? He's a dangerous guy?
I agree with her in those respects, but her comments towards Trump and being a puppet are slanderous. I'm glad he's suing her about it. You just don't make comments like that about people, especially at a time like this. Yes, your points are well taken. I'll give the devil her due.
Well, but we weren't at war with, we're not at war with Russia now, but we weren't having an issue with them back then. I think that was, and neither one of those people were in office at the time. So I think you could say what
Correct.
You want.
Yeah, well, I support anti-slander laws, so that's a different subject. But
now, when Trump said that Hillary Clinton should be in prison, or would be in prison if he was president, do you think that was slanderous? Or called
no.
her a nasty woman?
No, well, that's a kind for compared to what he said about Stormy Daniels and many other people, but absolutely not. The Clinton Foundation has gotten away with Clinton. She has gotten away with Benghazi. She's gotten away with stealing at the Clinton Foundation. She had more emails than Nixon had tapes, so I think they're like a Corleone family who gets away with everything.
I think here's
or in real life, John Gotti.
Well, I think here's the point I'm getting at. When you come into a situation and you like politician and not so much the politic. If you're a fan of Trump, if you dislike Hillary Clinton, if you dislike Biden, if you like Ted Cruz, that your opinion in some ways is already formed, not based on fact, but based on favoritism before you ever get to the subject. And that's a lot of the problem with opinion-oriented talk. Nothing wrong with it. Free airwaves, but is it always factual? We don't know.
It depends. I try to be as factual as possible. It's hard to be completely objective. I'm not going to lie about it. But I have criticized President Trump for shutting down the country. I criticized Ted Cruz when I was actually campaigning for him. The New York Values comment was ridiculous. So there's nobody in this earth that's not beneath criticism. But yeah, all of us who are extreme, which I am extreme to the right, are biased. It's hard not to be. Fox and CNN are both biased.
Well, everybody has some sort of personal bias. I think the decision is made, do I show this bias? Do I let this bias go into my work?
Well, yes. I mean, you do, because you're being real. One thing about talk radio that my show, I can speak for mine. And I think Mark Levin and even your co-worker Adam Leffer like this too. We're entertainers. Whether you learn, whether you grow, that's a separate story. But we say things differently than George Stephanopoulos, George Will, and the people on This Week in Washington Week would say it. Like, it doesn't mean we're not real. It just means we're trying to make it a little more lively. Like, I had a debate. I debated a lot of people. Like, you wouldn't know the names probably, but yes, Lori Allred, you know. I debated her. I meant what I said. We were both very polite to each other. And debate on abortion was over. And her facts and my facts are going to be a little skewed. One to the pro-life side, one to the pro-choice side. But in the end, we're both being honest because we're just talking about how we feel.
When you call yourself an entertainer, how do you define that?
I do issues and humor. I'm lively. I tell a lot of jokes. I use a lot of wit. Especially when my guests aren't there, actually, because when they're there, I feel like they're there, they're your guests, you have to let them talk, you have to be a gentleman. No matter if you, even if I disagree, we get both get to speak, and except for Black Lives Matter, they've all gone, I wouldn't let promote that on my show, they've all gone to put their website out at the end. But the debates are entertaining, the shows, like the interviews are entertaining with thought-provoking questions, and I get a little rowdy sometimes, and that can be entertaining too.
Are you more interested in what the guest knows, or what you can tell the guest?
Both. It goes together.
How?
Because when we're on the show together, we're playing off each other. I'll compare it to having a Chevy sidekick. When someone like one of my most honored, two of my most honored guests were all over North, Ted Nugent, I really have, they intently will let me, I listen to what they say, but I care about what I can do for the show, too. And when I listen to the repeats, which I think we all do of our shows, it's not like our friends would say it's entertaining. I feel like John Ford or Martin Scorsese saying, how can I make this better?
But how much information do you elicit when you're trying to entertain?
Oh, very much. I do my homework. I study before. I don't have opinions without reasons. I can back my opinions up. Sometimes I have to go to extracurricular sources like Heritage Foundation or, I know that's, I mean, they're not going to be left sources. They'll be right as sources or Eagle Forum or Conservapedia. But I see where those come from too. You know what I'm saying? It's like the street. They don't make those facts up. They come from somewhere of a neutral paper's original source. So do some of the left groups like Common Cause or MoveOn.org or the ADL. It all comes from something.
If you had to say something positive about President Biden right now, what would you say?
He trying. He at least nominates judges who have the beliefs he has. That's the best thing I can do.
Now that's kind of a backhanded compliment.
It is.
Now, why is it so hard to give him a compliment? You think you could find one thing?
I'm trying. But he has hurt this country so much with his callousness, with his incompetence, with his, and I don't think it's all his fault. I think he's a puppet of Obama, Bernie Sanders, and many other people. He has tried to take my freedoms and your freedoms away. He has amputated the noses of dogs in Afghanistan while leaving men behind. He has promoted Kamala Harris to watch the border, and all she can do is cackle like an idiot. I think he's a disgrace.
When it comes,
I didn't get as bad as Jimmy Carter, but he is.
When it comes right down to politics, do we really know in the time how well things were handled? We look at things now that happened 50, 60, 70, 100 years ago and see them completely different than we did at the time. Much like with Harry Truman. Harry Truman used to be thought of as one of the worst presidents in the history of the United States. Now, he usually gets in the top 20.
I think you're absolutely right, Scott. I think Harry Truman, but like, for instance, Roosevelt, FDR, he was very successful and popular at the time, but now we learn that the NRA programs and the New Deal increased the Great Depression until we got into World War II, and that was the soldiers. He also turned the Japanese, turned back the SS St. Louis. So I think now people are questioning how good he was. I think he was terrible. But I don't think Clinton was that bad, Bill Clinton, by the way. I think people are learning that on foreign affairs he wasn't good, but domestically he did a pretty good job.
Now, why were you able to come to that opinion on Bill Clinton? And not on Jimmy Carter or Joe Biden or President Obama or even Franklin Roosevelt, who's usually in the top three presidents?
Because I lived under Bill, I could see what they could do. It's not just a partisan race. Like, for instance, I don't think Nixon or Ford were great presidents. They were too big government style, and Watergate defined the Nixon presidency. Bill Clinton, I can't say, was a bad president. We had a good economy. Obama did not save the economy. We were never under, the underemployed was very high, and we were under 2%. and growth always, but Bill Clinton was a small government Democrat. He signed welfare reform, which is a major triumph, but on foreign policy, it was an out-and-out disaster. So I give him a C. I give him a C if I was giving him a grade.
Who was the least effective conservative president in your lifetime?
Ford.
Why Ford?
First of all, pulling out of Vietnam was a terrible idea. He was a decent man who never got elected and didn't know what the hell he was doing. The economy was in bad shape. He didn't know how to lead. I think Reagan would have been a much better choice in 76, and there could have been much better people to choose. I don't think George H.W. Bush was a good president either, or George W. I think George H.W. Bush's only great accomplishment was the American Disabilities Act, but I'll give Ford the award for the worst and least effective conservative president of my lifetime.
I want to talk about the Supreme Court hearings, nomination hearings for Ketanji Brown Jackson. What have you made of those?
It's very sad how incompetent she is and how partisan the people are. I mean, and then how partisan the media is. Let me give you an example of her. That's what we're talking about. This is a woman who has a record going soft on pornographers and pedophiles. She is doing the biggest laughing circle since Howard Dean Chant. You remember that? I'm sure you do, Scott. When she said, "I don't know what a woman is. I'm not a biologist. She said, I don't know when life begins. I'm not." I mean, she just can't defend her record. She's only answering to people like Cory Booker, who gave an embarrassing term of endearment moment there that just seemed really out of place. Someone I would vote for to replace Breyer if they were competent. I don't think she is.
Is anybody going to cross party lines in this vote?
Maybe Chris Sinema, Joe Manchin said he is voting for her. I don't know why, but I'm a little surprised about that.
Well, he's a Democrat, so he wouldn't be crossing party lines if you consider her a Democratic choice.
Maybe Susan Collins or Lisa Murkowski or Chris Sinema.
Isn't Sinema a Democrat?
Yeah, but she won't vote against her, is what I'm saying. But it's possible, but I don't think so.
But you think there will be some Republicans, Collins, who do vote for her?
A couple, not many.
Which will be enough to confirm. Well, this is where we are now, though, when it comes to Supreme Court justices. On both
sides.
It'll
be enough to confirm her, yes. And it wouldn't be the worst thing because she's a Democrat, a progressive replacing a progressive.
You know, here's one of the problems I think that this whole conversation belies. When Madeleine Albright died last week, and I had Madeleine on the show, she was seen...
My condolences.
What's that? Well, see, exactly. Yeah, well, and you see her as a very divisive person. And she was seen by a lot of people as a very divisive person. But if you go back to the 90s, when she was nominated as the first female Secretary of State, I don't think there was a vote against her, Republican or Democrat. What happened?
I think she had the respect. I don't think she was divisive at all. I don't remember when I said that, but I mean, if I did say that, but I think she was somebody both sides respected, actually. I think that she made decisions that weren't always in agreement with me but or the conservatives, but, you know, it doesn't mean she wasn't good at what she did. I mean, she was someone who loved this country, and she was someone that even Jesse Helms got along with. And I'm sorry for her passing.
Well, she was very hard. I remember when she was on in 2016, she was very hard on Trump because of his relationship with Putin. Or her perceived relationship with Putin. Or his lack of knowledge in foreign affairs, being a Secretary of State as she was.
Well, I think a lot of us had that concern because he didn't have experience and he proved us wrong. I mean, he did great with Iran, Yemen, the Abraham Accords, Israel. He took strong stance against Venezuela, Cuba. And Putin didn't attack Ukraine when he was president. Nor would they ever.
When it comes to the Supreme Court, isn't the truth really now that if they perceive you as being pro-choice. The Democrats will vote for you. If they perceive you as being pro-life, the Republicans will vote for you. And there will be very few people who cross that line regardless, because they don't want to get eaten up by their own party on cable news, on internet radio, by opinionated hosts, which didn't used to be there in the day of Madeleine Albright and Bill Clinton and people of that nature, that's really what is driving this. That it's really not if people are qualified anymore. It's really, I've got to go back and win this election. And if people find out I did this, I'm going to lose a lot of votes. And chances are there's going to be somebody waiting there to take my spot.
Scott, you're absolutely right, I think. Before Robert Bork's nomination, you remember him from 1987, when he got slapped down, everybody voted for Scalia. Everybody voted for Lewis Powell, Byron White. Victor Abna. I can't say the guy's name too well. His lower course. It used to be the most qualified person gets it. And I'll tell you something. I don't think we should know their opinions on these issues. If they adhere to their opinion to the Constitution, and there's many different interpretations, that's what we should judge it by.
But don't you think at this point that the president who nominates them or the people who vet them ask these questions?
Yes, but they get it wrong. Let me give you a perfect example. You know what I'm going to say, probably. George H.W. Bush picked David Souter. Look what he turned out. He turned out to be, he's not in the court anymore, but he was quite liberal. JFK put Byron Wizard White on the court. He was very conservative. John Roberts was the Supreme Court Chief Justice. He disappointed many people and started out conservative, as did Sandra Day O'Connor. But I think if they hold to the Constitution, that's really what matters.
Well, now see, this is where I get confused about the Supreme Court, because I used to think that it wasn't their own opinions or even how they had ruled on cases that mattered. What mattered was the particular case in front of them and what the law said. So it really didn't matter if you were pro-life or pro-choice. It didn't matter if you were Second Amendment, anti-Second Amendment. It didn't matter when it came to that who or what president appointed you. What mattered was, what does the current law say? But that's not the case anymore.
It should be the case, and I think we need to go back to that, because partisan wars, I'm going to say this, should not involve the Supreme Court, because remember, we can't write to our Supreme Court justice or elect them and tell what they should do. They're not there to serve the people, they're there to serve the Constitution, and I think that we've lost sight of that since the 1987 Robert Bork hearings, from left and right, all the way down, and I think it needs to have a change.
What do you make of the text messages that were obtained from Judge Clarence Thomas's wife in regard to not giving up the election that were sent to President Trump's staff? Let's put it that way.
She did nothing wrong. There was evidence that election was stolen. There was evidence that, I mean, you have four states, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Michigan and Arizona, that are leading very heavily to Trump. When they're called, they're all called for Biden. Dominion machines were used. I think she's standing her ground. There's no chance we could overturn it now. And I stand by her.
How does a president, a sitting president at that time, President Trump, let an election be stolen? When he's in charge of, and he said before the election that he felt it was going to be stolen. He's the head of the government. He's the head of all the offices, CIA, FBI. How does that happen from somebody, Joe Biden, at that point, who is not in any kind of government office?
Scott, you posed an excellent challenge. I haven't answered. The 10th Amendment, every state is different. Every state has their own election laws. And apparently, Florida had better election laws than Pennsylvania did. and or even states which are like Wyoming or not Wyoming, excuse me, Michigan, where the court is saying there should be an audit. It is too late, but because the 10th Amendment lets the states decide, Trump really couldn't do much.
You know,
of course, wouldn't hear it.
We spent a lot of time talking about this during the election, so I don't want to get too much back into it. But here's my question about the stealing of the election, since it does kind of reflect on these text messages. If President Trump and the people surrounding him really believe that the election was stolen and that there really was voter fraud in the United States, why did he only challenge the vote count in states that he lost? Because if there was voter fraud, people would say it's uniform, and it would have to be in 50 states, and or at least in more than just the states he lost. And in some states, it could have benefited Biden, like in Florida, where the polls were completely different than what we saw. So why would you only challenge in the states that you lost?
It's not that he lost. He did lose those states. Those are the four obvious examples. And he thought they needed to be looked at.
But why not challenge Ohio? We're right in the middle of Pennsylvania, Michigan, and that area, Wisconsin.
There was no evidence there was voter fraud in Ohio of any kind.
And also he didn't lose Ohio.
Both of them. But those states were suspicious and red flagged because of the reasons I mentioned.
Now, what were the red flags in those areas?
Sure. The Dominion machines, the dead people that voted, I hope I get to vote when I die, the cartoon characters, more than that, Scott, it was that people, Trump had four states in his favor, Pennsylvania, Arizona, Michigan, and Georgia, when it was coming to the end. And when it came to the end, Biden won. Red flag, that's why Brian Kemp did what he did with the election integrity bill.
With what we saw on January the 6th, was there any chance that a majority of Trump voters were ever going to believe he lost? I mean, that pump was primed in 2016 when then-candidate Trump said he would not necessarily accept the results of the election. They were primed before the 2020 election when he said he felt the fix was in. They were primed after the election when he gave speeches from the White House saying he felt there had been some kind of voter fraud right up through January 6th and the Capitol riots. Was there any chance at all that people were going to believe that President Trump could lose? If Joe Biden had won 50 states, would they still have said, voter fraud, that's too much slighted in one way?
Well, I had a caller on the show who always said Trump he thought was going to get back in office. I mean, nobody I know agreed with him, but there were people who thought they had a chance or else they wouldn't have taken on the case. I didn't think there was a chance. You can't really overturn an election. But these are not people as informed as you and I, Scott. They think if we march, if we say what we have to say, they'll listen to us. And so people's minds were made up, you know? And don't confuse them with the facts.
We have about two minutes.
It was a losing battle.
We have about 2 minutes left here, Mike, and I want to get this in. Because I like having you on, and I think it's an interesting conversation. But when we have an interview at the end of this in 2 minutes, the people who have listened, do you think they know what's going on in the world? Or do you think they know Mike Essen's opinion of what's going on in the world?
The latter. Some believe it, some don't, but I hope they base it on their own judgment, not just because I say it.
But do you think they do? Herein lies the quandary. When you say it, and you're on the radio, and you're given a forum, and the other person's not giving their opinion, do they take everything you say as fact? Because you don't start every statement by saying, in my opinion, this is what's going on. I think this is what's going on. You state it as fact, even though you have referred to yourself as an entertainer and have just said, this has been your opinion for 45 minutes, not fact. And you have a minute.
Sure. They're not mutually exclusive. I could be an entertainer in the style I do my show and just give facts from, or give opinions, strong opinions from what I see by putting two and two together and getting the statistics that I find reliable. I don't want to, but there are people who listen to whatever I say and do that, but I hope people don't. I hope they enjoy me more than anything and listen to my show for any reason they want, but I don't think cults are appropriate.
It's very interesting. Mike Essen can be heard on blogtalkradio.com. Mike, when can they hear you?
/, Mike Essen Show. Every day at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Scott, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, Mike. Mike Essen, hopefully giving you a little different opinion on things going on in the world. And remember, in his own words, opinion, not fact, entertainer. Very honest. BlogTalkRadio.com, Mike Essen. Coming up on the top of the hour here. Stick with us, back in about 15 minutes.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, LP, Marion, Ohio. The Talking Place. For Jim Lavelle, the man handcuffed to Lee Harvey Oswald when he was assassinated.
So when you're coming out the door with Lee Harvey Oswald handcuffed to you, you're there to protect him. Take me through that walk. What do you see? How did it happen?
All right. Well, as I walked through the door, I could see. I've always made it a habit in my